Former NHL scout, general manager, now analyst on TSN, Craig Button. Craig, how are you, my man?
I am good, Jason. How are you?
Excellent. Hey, I want to thank you for the scouting report on Falk. It was great. Helps out a lot in the article. Got a lot of good feedback from people. They like that stuff, so I appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
Now, speaking of Falk, I'm going to we got Falk, you've got Barry, and you've got Sammy Vatanen. I want you to rank them 1, 2, 3 and tell me what you like about each guy.
Wow, that's tough to do. I got to rank them now. Jeez, all I got to do is rank, and I just open myself up for all kinds of backlash.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I think that, you know, for me, the tough one is Falk and Vatanen. You know, I think Falk's a little bit bigger, and I'm not too concerned about how much bigger. You know, and Vatanen, I think, has probably a little bit more, how shall I put this? You know, has a little bit more, I guess a little bit better defending ability. That's how I would put it. You know, not that Justin couldn't be solid or like is terrible. I just think that Sammy has a little bit better in that regard. You know, Sammy and Justin both have, you know, they play with a real, well, so does Tyson. They play with a lot of confidence. They wanna make a difference in the game. I think Sammy and Justin's games are a little bit more rounded. I think that Tyson has a real dynamic high end offensive ability. And more like, I don't think that Tyson can play as many situations as Justin and Sammy. So if you ask me, I'd say Sammy is more well-rounded. You know, Justin has a little bit more advanced on the defensive side than Tyson. And then Tyson has real, you know, high-end offensive ability. If you ask me who I would take first, I would take Sammy Vatanen. And it would be close right after there with Justin Falk.
Interesting. Okay. See, Barry's the one I know a lot of people love his offense, but I'm with you, Craig. I'm not sold on the defensive side. And I, you know what? If Barry was a guy who I could slot in as my number four defenseman, great. But Edmonton's right side, like if they're acquiring somebody, you know, they're looking right now, probably be somebody who's a number two, right? Like none of those guys are number ones because there's very few number ones in the NHL. And even that is going to be a lot of pressure. Perfect world, maybe you could get both of them. I just don't think it's necessary. And it might be too much of the same thing. But when you look at the Oilers team specifically, do you, like you say you like Vatanen the best. And sometimes a player fits better on a certain team. Do you think he's the best fit of those three in Edmonton, or is there one more just based on personality, contract, everything else, who might be a better fit for this group?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when you have young defensemen that are growing in their game, like Klefbom, like Darnell Nurse, I think Tyson Barry needs a little bit more support, and I don't think he can lend as much support to those guys as they're developing in their game. You know, I think that, you know, you look at Vatanen and how he's played in Anaheim with the likes of Lindholm and Fowler, you know, and I'm talking about within the group. And I think that, you know, that happens when you're a little bit older. I should say older, you got a little bit more games under your belt, like Sammy does. You know, I think you look at what happened this year in Carolina, you know, Justin Falk, you know, Slavin was a rookie. You know, Pesci was a rookie. You have Noah Hanifin, who was a rookie. You know, I think Justin Falk could really help a Klefbom and a Nurse. And I feel the same way with Vatanen, whereas I think that, you know, Tyson Barry needs a little bit more than Nurse and Klefbom can give him at this point in time. So if we're talking about, you know, at the present time, for me, clear that the Tyson Barry falls behind Vatanen and Falk for me.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, they announced today that the rosters for the World Cup of Hockey will be announced now in 2 weeks from today. They moved it up a week just because they don't want it to conflict with the Stanley Cup Finals, although Pierre LeBrun said they might get an extra day for Canada if it goes 7 games between St. Louis and San Jose. And, you know, when you look at a team like this, you're 2 weeks out. Is there, like, do you have enough information today? Do you think something could really change in the next 2 weeks?
I would like to answer it by saying I would hope not. I would hope that you have enough information to make a decision today. Yeah, you know what I don't get? Why don't you wait till the Stanley Cup playoffs are over? Why do they have to be done before the Stanley Cup playoffs are completed? Makes no sense to me. Like, well, for an example, I'll give you an example. So you're the San Jose Sharks, okay? And you are, you know, you're playing in, you're playing, you're going to announce it, and you're going to announce, and what, you're going to the Stanley Cup Finals, and you've just beaten St. Louis, and they're going to announce that Alex Pietrangelo made the team and Brett Burns didn't. Or conversely, Brett Burns made the team and Pietrangelo didn't make it as you're going to the Stanley Cup Final. Well, like, why do you want to do that? Like, why can't they wait till the Stanley Cup Finals are over? Or Stanley Cup, like, I don't get it. And sorry, marketing isn't an answer. Wait till one event is done, the regular season, and then announce the remainder of the team.
That's hard to argue with that, I agree. Although I will say this, I think the way Pietrangelo and Burns are both playing, I think PK Subban might be the guy on the outs looking in, because there's basically two right-handed spots. Doug Armstrong told us that on the show. He's going to take two righties and a lefty. So you got Subban, Pietrangelo, and Burns. The way Burns has played this year, I can't see how he doesn't make that team.
Subban's not going to make the team, and I'll tell you right now, Letang, Burns, or Pietrangelo, one of those three are going to be out. Subban's out.
Yeah. Which one of those three think is
so
out
now,
there?
And now think about that. And think about your, how does Doug Armstrong go and look at Alex Pietrangelo knowing he didn't name him to his team? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no.
Like, honestly, there's no other word for it. Like, you know what? Like, again, one event ends, now you get to the next event. And don't tell me about marketing. It's a bunch of garbage.
Craig Button joins us. Do you think Taylor Hall makes that team?
Yeah, I think Taylor Hall has a strong. Do I think he makes it, or do, like, I think obviously he's got a strong chance. I've always had him on the team.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, and when Armstrong said they need natural wingers, like, you look at the guys, you know, Brad Marchand, Duchesne, Perry, Hall. They're all kind of, funny enough, they're all battling it out at the World Championships, and I think they're all trying to get on that team. And to me, I know Brad Marchand had an unreal year. If I look at their careers, Hall's been a better player in his career over Brad Marchand. Very different styles of player. I would be quite surprised, actually, if Hall didn't make that team.
Yeah, the way I look at it, too, I don't think this is about career. I think it's about, you know, where you're at in your game right now and, you know, what you're capable of doing in a short tournament. Now, obviously, you know, if you have a history and they know you and you're still on top of your game, that can carry things. But I think they got to, and it goes back to your first question. If anything can happen that you don't know. Like I said, I would hope not. I would hope that the knowledge on these players is as much as you're gonna have. And now it's a debate back and forth on what's happening internally with your group. But if you're still looking for information on these players, it begs the question to be asked that, well, what have you been doing up to this point?
Craig Button from TSN joins us. We're into the Final Four, and it was crazy, Craig. I looked it up. Dallas and Nashville both lost the season in their 102nd game of the year, and Nashville had never lost by 5 goals all year long, the worst time of the year to have that happen, and Dallas hadn't lost by 5 all year until this series. The Blues did it twice. It was, the Dallas one, a lot of it fell on their goaltender. He was awful, but that game last night for Nashville unraveled rather quickly. To see Josi and Weber on the ice for all 5 goals against, I'd have to look through the stats, but I was certain that, I know it didn't happen this year. I doubt that's ever happened in a game that they were on the ice for 5 goals against.
Yeah, and you talk about how it just kind of shifted quickly on Nashville. You know, I'm watching the game. We're sitting around and we're watching the game. And the first 2 minutes, I said, geez, Nashville's really skating. Nashville really looks good, right? And then all of a sudden, 6 minutes later, we're looking at each other going, holy Jesus, Nashville hanging on for dear life. Thank God for Pekka Rinne. And, you know, like, I think with Shea Weber and Roman Josi, it's a classic example of, you know what? The best of players have off nights, and they have nights that are certainly didn't go the way anybody would want them to go, certainly not the way anybody would expect them to go, but they had one of those nights. Whatever could have gone wrong for Roman Yossi and Shea Weber did go wrong. And, you know, it's hard when you're talking about a game seven, when you're trying to move on to the next round and you have a game like that. So to me, you know, it is that part to remind everybody that even the very best players have games like Roman Yossi and Shea Weber did last night.
Yeah, it happens for sure. Who do you like, St. Louis and San Jose, and why?
Yeah, you know, I'm having a tough time getting off the San Jose bandwagon here. And, you know, to me, you know, their goaltender is really good. I don't think that St. Louis is going to run into the shoddy goaltending they ran into and they were fortunate to run into in Dallas. I think San Jose has more depth than Chicago had. And, you know, the way they play in direct lines. They get after you. They force you into tough spots. They take advantage on the power play. And, you know, to me, I just think that San Jose's got a little bit more than the St. Louis Blues right now. I think the St. Louis Blues are really good. I like San Jose. Is it going to surprise me if St. Louis wins? Not at all. But I'd love to see Doug Armstrong and Ken Hitchcock go and compete for a Stanley Cup? Absolutely. But right today, I like San Jose just by a little bit.
What about Pittsburgh-Tampa?
Yeah, you know, it almost seems like, you look at Pittsburgh, we know that they've been on an unbelievable roll. And I asked myself in the playoffs, to beat a team like Pittsburgh four times, you have to find a way to – you know, really get them off kilter, to get them kind of, you know, tipped up on their edges. And then, you know, once they're up on their edges, can you push them over? And I don't know, as good as Tampa Bay has been, I don't know if they have that in them four times. You know, Stamkos isn't going to be back, or it doesn't appear he's going to be back. And Strowman will be coming back after a long layoff. And I just think Pittsburgh has a lot going for them. I think that I thought Washington could beat Pittsburgh, and I thought they had a lot. I think they have a lot more depth than the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I think that Pittsburgh poses a lot of challenges for Tampa Bay. So I like Pittsburgh better than I like Tampa Bay.
Well, the crazy thing is Pittsburgh's third line might be their best line. Well, is their best line right now with Phil Kessel and Hagelin. And Nick Bonino. And, you know, Phil Kessel got ripped a lot by people in Toronto, Craig. And you look in the playoffs where he's a point-a-game player in the playoffs when it's the hardest time to produce. I know he doesn't come across as the guy who's got the six-pack or anything like that and seems very laid back. But, man, Phil Kessel is a player where, you know, I understand they didn't like his salary. But, man, the Pittsburgh Penguins have to be absolutely in love with that trade right now.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, Jason, and, you know, it's easy to take a small sample size and evaluate it. Like, number one, Phil Kessel has always been a prolific scorer in the National Hockey League. So yep. If anybody's surprised about Phil Kessel scoring, like, you haven't been paying attention, number one. Number two is, you know, like, they acquired Phil Kessel, and people leaped to this conclusion that Phil Kessel was going to score 75 goals. Sidney Crosby finally has a right winger. Evgeny Malkin, who are they going to play? It didn't work with Crosby. It didn't work with Malkin. Let's get that clear right now. It didn't work. And until Jim Rutherford changed the coach, added Trevor Daley, made a trade for Hagelin, called up some players from the minors that could really, you know, be speed. And quite frankly, Phil Kessel doesn't get the same matchups as Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby. And that's what you want to do. You want to put players into positions where they can take advantage. And that's exactly what's happened with Pittsburgh because of their depth. And, you know, when you have a Crosby and you have a Malkin, and then they're going to take up, they're going to occupy the top players. I mean, you now have to take advantage. I give Phil Kessel full marks for taking advantage. I think he's capable of taking full advantage. And I think he's in the ideal spot, in a position where you don't have to ask him to be that top guy, go-to guy. And he's a great example of, you know what, just because it doesn't work in one place doesn't mean it can't work in another place. Phil Kessel's a great example of that.
Steven Stamkos, Craig, you know, you've been a GM. The fact that he hasn't signed, and it's rare that we see big-name free agents like that, you know, enter it. I guess the last time we saw was Parise and Ryan Suter, you know, kind of in their prime guys who go to free agency. Do you think there's any chance Tampa Bay and Stamkos make a deal, or do you think he's destined to check free agency?
Yeah, like I'm not going to be a person that's going to, you know, say there's not a chance for a deal. I think when you look at teams and you look at where the salary cap is, the salary cap has not gone up in the last 2 years, and it doesn't appear that it's going to go up significantly. So now when you're paying players based on comparables that got paid in a different salary cap, the upper limit, and then you start to look at what you're going to have to do to keep players, it just seems to me that it's going to be, it looks like a difficult task for Steve Stamkos to be paid what he feels he's worth and what he feels he's accomplished at this point in time, and for the Tampa Bay Lightning to be able to keep a team together that can be really competitive. If you sign Steven Stamkos, well, then somebody's going to have to move out. And, you know, who that is and what it means, I mean, those are the things that Steve Yzerman goes through. But, you know, from the perspective that I look at it with, it just seems that it's going to be tough for both parties to find a way where they can both be satisfied that that it works for their team and that it represents Steven Stamkos' value from his perspective. So I'm not one to say it's 80-20 against or whatever, but it appears to me that it's going to be tough for Steven Stamkos to remain at Tampa Bay Lightning. And I don't think it's because Steve Yzerman doesn't want him or doesn't like him or doesn't value him. I just think that the salary cap does that at different times, and those are some of the tough decisions you have to make.
Oh, I agree with you. And you look at all the guys who are RFAs, and then Hedman, who I think is their best player, is a UFA next summer. Steven Stamkos, the last 2 years, Craig, hasn't been a point-of-game player. Maybe it's the coach, or maybe it's coming off the broken leg. I don't know. Maybe it's just a little bit of a down year like Ovechkin had a few years ago and then came back to be a three-time 50-goal scorer. We'll see. But to me, I'm not sure Stamkos is worth the $9 or $10 million that he's going to want.
Well, and what you got to keep in mind, too, you know, let's look at the L.A. Kings, okay? And, you know, Dustin Brown was there for two Stanley Cups, their captain and everything. They gave him a long-term contract, not a good contract. You know, they traded for Marin Gabrick. They signed him to a longer-term, not a good contract. You know, for the L.A. Kings, and there's an example of a team. You know, it's not about saying you don't value what those guys did, but at this point in time, the cap hasn't gone up. We can't afford you based on what we got to pay other players, and you got to move on. I think the L.A. Kings with Dustin Brown and Marin Gabrick are a good example. And, you know, when you start to look at a team now, do you want to be the L.A. Kings and make the playoffs and go out in five games? Because a big part of their problem is they didn't have the depth, and they didn't have the depth specifically on the blue line. So, you know, these are the types of challenges that teams have, and I think that's, you know, just an example. And one certainly that other teams are looking at, and I would imagine same with the Tampa Bay Lightning peering in on the LA Kings situation.
Craig, as always, good to catch up with you, my man. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next Friday.
We will. Thank you, Jason.